So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review.
The horror of all this is, I'm sure that Ms. Bagwell was watching.
Get it out. All the way. We're sick. Keep it out.
All right, they do have wonderful hospitals in this part of the country.
No, stay here. I got him.
He's fortunate for that. All right, it's tough. That man's gone through.
Oh my goodness!
Ladies and gentlemen, we wondered about how low they would go. We found out how low this. This is revolting. This is revolting. This is not even worth going. They should be thrown out of wrestling for life right now.
Come on.
And security intervenes, and rightfully so.
They made a fool out of everyone.
They made a fool out of all of us. But you... Oh, that's sickening.
I thought he was hurt. I legitimately thought he was hurt.
Of all the lowest forms of life in the world, Buff Bagwell's in. Think of how many people he scammed tonight. Medical personnel, security personnel. Forget about us up here. We just have to call EC. Wrestling fans, production personnel. And I bet you, although I couldn't see there from the shots, I bet you Bischoff was in on it.
And think about all of his friends and family members that this impacted.
Absolutely.
Also.
Think about what he did to his mom right there, who was watching. I'm sure was watching.
This is
of course she was watching. He didn't care about his family at home watching. He didn't care about everything. I wouldn't doubt. Bischoff being involved, I wouldn't doubt if Hogan had something to do with this also.
There's a new form of a jerk, and it's being called a buff.
It is John Pollock, Wei Ting, and we have a great review for you today on Review Away. How we are going to transition into this show, I will make it work perfectly here. But Wei, you know what this show has in common with R-Truth?
What?
Today, we are going to get got with Dylan Gott here in studio. Comedian
Hello.
Extraordinaire.
Oh my God. Just played Windsor, Ontario, guys. I'm huge.
Oh wow, Windsor, Ontario. Not bad. Home of Scott D'Amore. And here we go. And
a terrible place.
Wow. Well, Dylan, you were on the show a while back. What did we review with you the last time you were in here?
WrestlePalooza 97, I think.
WrestlePalooza 1997.
So I went from the heights, one of the best angles of all time, to the Ultimate Warrior with fire extinguishers.
One of the best angles of all time, I feel, on this Fall Brawl card. Well, Dylan wanted to come back on the show. We had a great time chatting with him last time. But Dylan, we asked you, all right, well, what do you feel like reviewing? And your response immediately was Fall Brawl 1998. And me and Wei just have the question of why.
Because it was the Warrior's first match back. That was shortly after the Warrior had passed on, and I feel like people when the Warrior passed, and this happens with everybody, they sugarcoat what actually it was. And on this card, I think you can see by the two clotheslines he did, there were some bad parts to that guy too. Not just great matches and part of your childhood, but like, dear God, he was terrible on this pay-per-view, and he was there for like 2 minutes, maybe.
This was one of those pay-per-view events that like has completely just been lost in the ether of my mind. Like, I had to like think like what even happened on this particular show, much less what I think everyone assumes that Ultimate Warrior run featured his one and only match with Hulk Hogan. Not true, because this might require air quotes, but this was technically a match that the Ultimate Warrior was involved in.
Technically, yes. And I had never watched a War Games before. And dear, it was the worst thing I've seen in my life.
Wait, are you a fan of War Games? Because I was never a big fan of War Games. I haven't liked the succession with the Lethal Lockdown we get. But there are some people, whether it be nostalgia or just some really well put together War Games matches decades ago, the people, they still clamor for it. They wanted the Shield and Evolution on Sunday to be a War Games match.
I think it's a very impressive visual spectacle, and I think that maybe is probably most of the draw. For a lot of people, the fact that you get to see two rings side by side and a steel cage surrounding both
so
of them.
So stupid.
It looks cool. I know, it's kind of stupid, but it looks really
more
cool.
More pyrotechnics, yeah. The better, though.
Yes. But, you know, as far as the matches go, I personally was never much of a WCW fan, especially from, you know, very, very early on when this concept was probably at its most successful. So I can't really say I've seen too many great ones myself either.
Take us back, Dylan, to Dylan Gott circa September 1998. Were you heavily into the Monday Night Wars? Because I'm always curious from Canadians, because I think for Americans, I mean, you had the big head-to-head battle. In Canada, you really had to go out of your way to stay up on WCW programming.
Oh, yes, I would. I would totally. This is the thing, though. Fall Brawl 1998 was actually the more palatable of my choices. I was just going to pick a Thunder from 2000.
That,
like, there was one match I remember specifically. It was Shane Douglas and Rick Steiner, and they screw up. They tried to do a fish out of water spot, and it takes a minute and a half.
Rick Steiner doing a fish out of water spot.
It was the best thing I've ever seen in my life.
We could do a whole podcast probably on that. Just sequence.
Just the, you know, remember the dog face gremlin where he had the spiked up hair and stuff? That era Rick Steiner. I watch matches all the time.
It was
the worst.
One of my favorite WCW moments, and I'm pretty sure it was a Thunder, was it was right when Russo came back, and the storyline was that Buff Bagwell is one of their guys that they're going to protect. And the powers that be were going to push Buff Bagwell. This was the storyline on television. So backstage, him and I think it's La Parca, they're going over their match, and they outline the finish. And
oh
then there
God.
Was a double cross in the ring. So you were supposed to know that they went against the script. If that, in a nutshell, was not WCW late 1999, you're missing out, folks.
You're going to get to the point, because you've just done so many reviews, where you're going to end up reviewing a bunch of Thunders in a row. And I want to be there for every single
one. I don't even know if we've reviewed a Thunder. Have we, Wei?
We did the one where Kevin Nash did commentary.
Oh, his final night on the booking team. Yeah. That's right. And he just decided to go on commentary for the entire show.
Yeah.
I really hope, as someone that, you know, we don't have the WWE Network yet, those are the kind of shows I want to see. Like, just regurgitate some old Thunders. Because as much as we crab about Impact, some of those Thunders, and to a lesser extent Nitros towards the dying days, amazing.
Amazing, but They're not to, like, TNA Impact level, I feel. Like, Impact is just, like, just they don't care at all. It's just a bunch of people just mailing it in.
I think with Impact, it's
the creative, at least, not the workers. The workers have something to prove, but, like, because they're like, oh, my God, I'm on TV. This will increase, like, whatever, my visibility and stuff. So they want to do a good job. But I feel like the creative is, like, they walk into a guy's room and they're like, write the show. And he's like, ugh, fine. And then he just scribbles something. And he's like, do that, I guess. I don't care. And he goes back to sleep.
I just equate Thunder as, like, it was – we are going to – the epitome of throwing a million things at the wall and let's pray something sticks. Like, they just tried some just outrageous stuff there. I mean – I remember the New Blood Rising pay-per-view, and they were doing a three-way with Goldberg, Steiner, and Nash. And the storyline leading up to it was they all did these sit-down interviews and how creative was not a fan of one of the three guys. And you were supposed to guess based on the build-up. And they said that three of the guys weren't going to go with the script and not lie down if they were scheduled to do the job. This was what was supposed to separate you from your $30 that month. Was the two of the guys were not going to go with the planned finish on the pay-per-view. It was going to be a shoot.
It's fantastic. That final year of WCW where just everyone's just mailing it in. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen – this is a very specific reference, and I'm sorry if no one gets it, but like a Stacy Keach movie, like Stacy Keach B-movies – he just mailing it in completely, and that's what wrestling was for in the year 2000. Rick Steiner is my personal favorite wrestler for that year of 2000 because he just didn't care. Like, even when he said, you don't like me, bite me. Like, he wouldn't even raise his voice. He would just be like, you don't like it, I guess that's okay.
So a question for both of you. Obviously, over time, stuff definitely gets romanticized. I mean, Ultimate Warrior's passing. It brought out a lot of that with people. WCW, to a lot of people, is like fondly remembered by a lot of people. And they just don't understand, like, what happened to this company? It was great. What is it about WCW? Is this how people are going to talk about TNA in 15 years?
Probably.
Man, that was a great time. That's when wrestling was wrestling. Back when we had committed matches and we had Christy Hemme on the creative team. I mean, that was my golden era of pro wrestling.
Just taking stuff from Dexter? I mean, this is going to age really well in this way. Where
look how they responded to
it.
Pop culture and what was working on television. They did the Sons of Anarchy in wrestling. That was awesome. Like, I really believe that's what we're going to hear in 10 years from now.
I don't know if you hear too much clamoring for... you do always occasionally hear, oh, why don't they do an old school WCW night? And I think when people think back about what they miss about something, they always think about the great things about it. They don't think about all the terrible angles and all the... But even that now, you know, like the Hummer angle, for instance, it's something I think we can all look back at and laugh at. And so if they ever did like a sort of a one night only WCW and they threw some references like that out, I think people would be it would be quite funny.
Could you imagine the WCW version of one night only?
Yeah.
And like Eric Bischoff, like in the ring instead of Paul Heyman, and like, I mean, what kind of nostalgia would you drum up involving a WCW? I would love to watch it. I would love to watch them put together a three-hour reunion show for WCW.
Like a Shockmaster appearance. You could have just everything.
Like, that's what I think it would degenerate into. No. I think they would not be able to put together a serious WCW reunion show. They would just have to make fun of them.
Yeah, for sure. It'd just be like Saturday night reunion type thing where they just have High Voltage go over like...
like, oh, the Roadblock?
yeah.
Some of the great
tandems. Those were the best. I don't know why I liked it, but like Roadblock, where it was just like this fat guy with a sash on, and his finishing move was you ran into him because he's a Roadblock.
Hole in one Barry Darso.
That was the best. I remember that guy so fondly.
What I love the most about WCW Saturday Night was like, famously, like WCW had like 180 guys under contract, and you'd tune into Saturday Night, and you'd find out where like... 60% of them are. Like, every week you tune in and it's, here's a new guy that you've never seen before on Nitro or Thunder. Here's Joey Maggs in a match.
Yeah.
You know, you just find the most offbeat former WWF, like, all of a sudden, there's Jim Powers on WCW Saturday Night. All these guys that would just pop out. And then you learn years later that these guys had these guaranteed deals. They were making money this whole time.
That's awesome.
Lanny Poffo made like six figures and didn't work a fucking show for WCW for like 3 years.
I just remember thinking Glacier is a big fucking deal. I remember that from watching... Because for the longest time, the only access I had to WCW was the Saturday Night thing. I forget which channel I watched it on. But it was like, Glacier is amazing. How can anyone stop this guy?
Yeah, that was... I mean, we've talked about it before. But, I mean, if you were into WCW at the time, it's like you got Saturday Night. If you had TBS, which was like, you needed like the next tier of your cable package.
Yeah.
I didn't even get that early on. Eventually, you could get Saturday Night. No, you never got TNT up here until TSN finally started picking up Nitro. You had to wait like 6 days for a one-hour recap show of it, and then finally Thunder was on TBS, and it was if you were a WCW fan in Canada, you really had to be dedicated to finding it. And I think that there was a lot of that digging you had to do that I think probably brought about a lot of fans of WCW, because you had to put in the work to catch up with this show.
Yeah, for sure. And I just remember my main help was that I didn't have many friends. So I was like, I got time to watch as much WCW as possible.
Oh, it's a common plight of most wrestling fans.
Not you, Wei. Wei was super popular.
He was cool guy?
No.
I feel Wei was king shit in high school.
Okay. You believe that? Yeah,
you sure. Running with your posse of like Gordon and Shu,
just smoking cigarettes, leaning up against cars,
yeah,
really putting out a sweet vibe.
Yeah, watching like DDP, Canyon, Bigelow come out as the Jersey Triad, and just shaking your head, disgusted.
That was one of the better. I also Canyon as the DDP thing. Where when he was Diamond Dallas Page,
yes,
and he would just diamond cutter like random people,
and attack people with his book.
That was the best. There were some good parts.
Did you ever read DDP's book, Positively Page?
No. Was it good?
Good skip.
Good skip?
I picked it up. I remember I was in Disney World on like a family vacation, and I found it at some bargain bin for like $5 and read it on like the plane ride home. And yeah, it was a lot of DDP of, and that's all you need to say if you've listened to a lot of DDP interviews talking about himself. Imagine that this thing was like 300 plus pages. This was positively pages and pages. This particular
that's
book.
Fantastic. I just remember like Foley came up with his book, and I was like, this is amazing. And then Rock came up with his book, and people were like, I bought the Rock's book, and I was like, why did you do that? What did you think? It's a 27-year-old guy. Who's just like, oh yeah, I wasn't over, and then I'm really over.
Yeah, that was a strange detour. For
he
the
talked
WWE.
About like DDTing a girl.
He I talked remember. About ripping a dude's tongue out during Ugh. His football career, and like the first half is all about his background, his football background and stuff, and it was, you know, whatever, take it or leave it. And then we hit WWF 96, and the rest of it's all in character. It's like reading a Rock promo for 150 pages, and it was god awful. And I started the book, and I had this – it's like, I got to finish this thing. I've already read half of it. It was horrendous. A just horrendous, horrendous book. And that was coming off the Foley book where expectations were so high that, man, these wrestling books are going to be tremendous.
Have you read every wrestling book?
Not everyone, but a fair amount of them, I would say.
Which ones did you skip?
Which ones? I never read China's book, If They Only Knew. I never knew. And
you should review China's book, please.
I mean, there's so many out there now. I mean, like, you're talking hundreds that, you know, the books that come out. I mean, there's a lot of small releases, Harvey Whippleman, books like that I've
seen. Harvey Whippleman's insane, though. Like, all his stuff is like Mob Connections.
Yeah, and he, like openly talks about it. I guess he figures there's a statute of limitations when it comes to running errands for the Memphis Mafia.
Whatever I hear him talk, I'm like, Jesus Christ, you have, like, no fear. You have no fear of... like anyone coming back and having a problem with the fact that you're giving names and dates to places. Like, that's insane.
I remember being at a SmackDown television taping like a decade ago in Hamilton, and we're going around to grab our tickets or something, and there's Harvey Whippleman, hands full with the Swish LA orders. And it was like, where are they now? There's Harvey Whippleman.
Just so. Like the Jim Cornette ordering Dairy Queen.
Oh, Dairy Queen.
We ordered the shit 40 minutes ago. That's probably the best video on the internet.
That one's so great because it was like, this was recorded before like YouTube was a thing. This was like in 1994, and this thing is on the internet and this exists. Because if this was a story, you'd just assume it's one of those fabricated wrestling tales. But this is documented of Jim Cornette losing his shit at a Dairy Queen.
Just a teenager, too, who's like, I'm sorry, Mr. Man. A teenager trying to, like, stand up to this car full of 300-pound men. Can you imagine how scary that would be if you're at a Dairy Queen and you're just trying to close and this, like, guy just starts calling you, like, a cunt at, like, 3 a.m.?
Man was hungry, and the woman thought this was a joke order. These pro wrestlers ordering... Why do you think we're joking, piece of shit? And then he gets out of the car. Like, yeah, I'm sure most of our listeners have seen this video, but fantastic. You got to meet Jim Cornette down in New Orleans. Was that the first time you got to meet Jim Cornette when we were at the Jim Ross show?
I didn't meet him at all.
You said hello.
No.
I think.
No. we had no interaction.
Boom. Just a wall that this conversation
destroyed.
Made.
Did you meet him?
Yeah. I could have sworn you were in the room when
No.
He met like, us.
I don't think so.
I was.
So, what was your interaction like?
It was. We were both there, and it's like we had met previously, like years ago. Because now he can't get up to Canada at all.
Then
all of a sudden he was like, John Pollock, and I was like, yeah, hi Jim, nice to see you and stuff. Had a great conversation. He was great on that show. I mean, him and Jim Ross telling the Leroy McGurk stories and hilarious.
He didn't yell at you.
He did not yell at me, so that was good. Are you going to be going to Jim Ross's show in Toronto in a couple of weeks?
Probably
are you
not.
Working?
I'm working. Yeah.
Working. How's the comedy scene going right now, Dylan? How busy are you?
I'm actually very busy. So I'm starting to headline some shows and stuff. So that's pretty fun.
Big fucking deal now.
I'm big shit, man. Like I was in Windsor, sleeping in a guy's apartment in the Booker's apartment. And there were six people that came to the late show.
It's a totally wrestling related story.
it was hilarious.
You didn't get screwed on your payoff or anything like that.
No, but I was prepared to be like, all right, man, this is it. It's back to like I was remembering how to fight. I don't know how to fight, but I can make it look like I can for about a half
that
minute.
That beard could be probably intimidating.
Yeah, especially since it's like an unkempt beard that grows in different places, so it looks like I'm just crazy.
This guy doesn't give a fuck.
I look like I'm the Roadblocks kid, to make it full circle.
Roadblocks kid. Quickly, before we get into Fall Brawl, I did want to mention you have an album out.
Yes.
Let our listeners know about this, because by the 25-minute or so mark, they're sold on you at this point. Okay. Now they're ready. Let's hear
ready.
This guy knows his wrestling.
I recorded an album with John Hastings, who's lives in England now, comes back once a year, so we're good friends. He's a big wrestling guy, too, and we decided to record an album. It's available for pre-order now. Just get me on Twitter, at Dylan Gott. On Twitter, DYLANGOTT. It's called We Farted because our first idea for the album was already done by the Flight of Conchords.
We sharted? Was that already taken?
No, we wanted to do the Hall & Oates album where you're just they're really sweaty. Sorry, and they're really sweaty and right next to each other's faces. But then three people have already done that, so we had to come up with one on the spot because his plane left in an hour.
So is this like a music album?
It's like a stand-up mixtape. So we start out doing an intro together, and then it goes one track between each of us. And it's good because there's a lot of with the Toronto style that's kind of coming in up in stand-up, there's a lot of there's kind of like parallel thought a lot, whereas me and John are kind of the farthest away from each other while kind of being the same thing. We're like the heart foundation of comedy, if you will. I'm like, Jim the Anvil, of course.
Yes, with the beard. Is it a compilation of like your material or are these songs or what?
Oh, it's just it's material. It's stuff that would work. We wouldn't regularly do in comedy clubs because it's funny, but it's just a bit weirder. It's not for people who like go out, pop their collars, go to a comedy club with no idea what they're seeing. You know what I mean? Because that we run into that a lot.
How busy can you get in a given week right now? Because there's so many clubs right now in the Toronto scene. Like I know so many different comedians where it's like pretty much they could go every night just hopping along from club to club. Are you fairly busy? I mean,
yeah. I pretty much do a show to a couple shows a night now. But then out of town work on the weekends, and that's the stuff that kind of pays the bills,
right?
That type of thing. You don't go to Windsor for the love of art. I'll tell you that. you don't get yelled at by a guy named Paul who then gives you $50 tip.
Yeah,
for some reason.
Beautiful Windsor, Ontario.
It's great though because I have a time responding to hecklers. Like I'm good at it, I can do it. But the best heckling thing I've ever seen in my life was Kevin Steen, where he literally responded to a heckle and then hurricanrana the guy out of the ring, and it looked like they planned it to hurricanrana the guy at the heckler.
Oh wow!
Because it crashed into the guardrail and the guy spilled his drink on his shirt.
Man, you gotta.
That was at Smash Wrestling. It was amazing.
What has been your best heckling experience, whether one that you are very proud of the way you shut him down or just a hilarious heckling experience?
There was a guy who just kept yelling, "You suck," and then the show was going great. Yeah, because it's not even like you can't – you're like, no, you suck. So I started – I eventually got him to the point where he would answer questions about himself. And then basically went on like a 5-minute rant about how his home life, because his wife left halfway through the show with "This is it, this is the end," and so I believe I caused a divorce.
Oh,
he heckled me, and then I got him divorced.
That's awesome.
So that was Whoa. Yeah. Well, I wasn't like
congrats, you win.
You heckled his personal life, right?
I ruined his personal life. So if you – even if just a slight heckle, I will literally ruin your whole life.
Well, this is – imagine you going to some guy's office and just showing up, looking over his computer and just telling him that he sucks at what he is doing to try and make a living.
Yeah.
That's the equivalent.
But it's always – it's people just get wasted and then they're like, this isn't – what like they have the attention span of like a gnat at that point. So I don't know what they want to see. I really don't, because a joke, even a one-liner, takes 30 seconds. So sometimes you'll be like, "So how's it going? You fucking suck." I'm like, "Wow, that was immediate, like immediate." And you get that sometimes, usually late shows. But yeah, it's super fun still.
Do you ever go to any improv shows? Do you follow any improv, or is it strictly kind of the stand-up scene?
It's strictly stand-up for me right now, but I have been wanting to do more improv and stuff. Because you do improv, right?
I was doing it for a while. I haven't been doing it for about a year or so now, since we were doing regular shows at Clinton's over on Bloor Street, and then got – they flipped that, and we didn't have a venue to perform at, and – they moved them to a Monday nights across the city. And for wrestling fans out there, Monday nights are a little tough for myself and Way here.
Yeah, it's at the Black Swan, right?
Yeah, they used to have at the Black Swan.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my – they were saying, well, we're going between Monday and Sunday nights. We're going to settle on one of those. I'm like, perfect. Awesome fucking nights.
I'm out. But yeah. There's other improv nights, I'm sure, if you want to get back into it, buddy.
Yeah, I'm looking to try. I'm trying to do improv. I'd like to do more jiu-jitsu with Way. I have a terrible life right now outside of pro wrestling, MMA, and being married. Outside of that, there's very little for John Pollock.
Well, you should get back into it, man. Just do jiu-jitsu improv at the exact same time.
Yeah. That, in a weird way, it's kind of like it is improv, isn't it, Way?
Absolutely, yeah. You're given a task, and then in a certain amount of time, you're supposed to do your task with your own set of moves, not predetermined.
Yeah. So. If you start getting into improv Way, that would be – you're just going to morph into, like, what I aspire to be. Everything. Jiu-jitsu.
I'm not going to get into improv. I just don't have the ability. I don't have the wit that you do.
You could be Canada's answer to Joe Rogan.
Yes, comedian / UFC commentator.
Yeah, and just
I have no aspirations at all to be
very popular podcast you're on.
That's right.
This is
your Canada's Joe
waiting experience.
Ayahuasca trips coming up, maybe.
Yeah, you can just go out into the woods.
Yeah,
you're not supposed to go alone on those.
No. I don't think I'll be doing any of that.
I think ayahuasca would do a number on you. You would just come back a different person.
That's what apparently it does to people.
Yeah,
yeah.
I feel you would just. You would be in such a different headspace that you couldn't even comprehend why am I sitting down to watch Fall Brawl 1998.
Well, I will say even caffeine does a number on me, so I think ayahuasca would completely fuck me up.
What are you drinking right now? We all have coffee right now. Look at this.
I'm the elitist here.
Yeah, I'm drinking a lactose-free milk coffee.
Oh, wow.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, I'm lactose intolerant.
A lack of toast.
Pretty badass.
Yeah. I've got the one milk, one sugar from Tim Hortons.
A regular.
Yeah, that's about it. And you going Balzac's.
I got Balzac's.
If you've never been to Balzac's, you think we're saying Balzac's right now. There's a Z in there.
Yeah, there's a
great coffee spot.
I like it a lot. And I have some friends that work there, so I get to.
Are you? Do you live around here without giving away your address or anything? Or is it,
I actually live in Scarborough.
You're in Scarborough.
I live in Scarborough.
You're in Wei Ting's hood.
I'm in Wei Ting territory.
Hey, look at that.
Pound it.
Yeah, we're tough.
The Scarboroughs here.
You just have to learn jiu-jitsu in Scarborough.
Well, here, how's this for a segue? Scarborough. It's no Winston-Salem, North Carolina, which was the home of Fall Brawl throughout the mid-90s. And we started off this pay-per-view with an opening video that looked to be a remix of what would later be Lance Storm's theme music here. I mean, just your typical basic edited video that was a staple of WCW production at the time, a Keith Mitchell original. And our announcers tonight, Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, and Mike Tenay, who announced at the start of the pay-per-view that there are new rules for War Games that were finalized moments before they went to the air. Awesome. And there was a lottery draw, and Bret Hart and Diamond Dallas Page will start the War Games event, which will be three teams of three, with anyone who gets the winning fall getting a title shot against Bill Goldberg at Halloween Havoc.
Terrible.
Got all that? This was confusing. If you were not following this at the time, extremely confusing. It was essentially a 9-way match, yeah. But they broke it up into teams for whatever reason.
I missed this part completely, so I had no idea what was going on in the actual War Games part.
All you need to know is one of the nine was Stevie Ray. If you had to guess who was taking the fall, you did not have to think too far out of the box or the cage in this particular instance. So they're in North Carolina. And this was right near the end of Ric Flair's lengthy hiatus with the company. He had been suspended earlier that year when he blew off an edition of Thunder, can't blame him, to go watch his son Reed in a wrestling tournament. And Bischoff was suing him at the time. It was thought Flair would never come back. But as is the case many a time in wrestling, the sides came together and would work an angle out of it. And this was the night before Ric Flair's return on Nitro, which was probably one of the most famous moments in Nitro history.
That was amazing.
Yeah, did not happen on this paper.
It was almost as big as his return this past Monday on Raw.
I know. This was, in St. Louis this past Monday night. Interesting angle that they put Ric Flair in.
Yeah, yeah. It reminded me just like just
got everyone nice. Pumped for Extreme Rules. See that this past Monday was to build up the pay per view. This was to get you off of the high of pay per view in 1998. So they explain all of the rules for the War Games, and then we cut to Ernest Miller in the back, who is being held by security. He's just going crazy for whatever reason. We don't know who he's being pulled apart from, just that he's causing a disturbance backstage.
They explained it. He's angry because people don't think he's great.
Who was this person that set him off? Was this just like a random like relapse into like this false sense of security he had of himself, or what was... Wrong. Ernest Miller was just...
He's got some self-esteem issues.
Yeah. They throw to Gene Okerlund in this wonderful white suit and black bow tie. Only the finest here on pay-per-view. And previews how loaded this card is as he brings out Chris Jericho, the television champion at the time, to lots of boos. Says he has a scoop for Gene Okerlund. Cuts a promo on Bill Goldberg, your WCW champion who was nowhere to be found on this pay-per-view. Nowhere.
Yeah, that was weird.
Nothing. In fact, they later told you, hey, if you want to see Bill Goldberg, he's wrestling for free tomorrow night against Sting. A match that probably bigger than any match on this pay-per-view, I would say. So Jericho says he's
wrestling Sting for the title?
They announced that on the show the next night on Nitro.
Yeah, and they were always like, oh, man, if you want to see the end of this angle, you're going to have to watch Thunder on Thursday.
So
like,
what was the point of Sting being in the main event?
They explained that if Sting wins the main event, he'll get to fight Goldberg twice.
Oh, wow.
What heavy stakes. Got to push Nitro. So this was at the time where Jericho was doing the constant promos against Bill Goldberg, and this was actually the program that Jericho cites as the reason he wanted to leave the company, because Goldberg didn't want to work a program with him, thought Jericho was beneath him, and Jericho thought, you know, people were getting into this, and it could build up to a match where Goldberg beats him, and Goldberg had no interest in this at the time. But in this promo, he challenges Goldberg to a title versus title match later on in the show. Title versus title, just on a whim here.
Jericho's by far, him and I'm going to say the Cat, are the best performers on this show.
Oh, wow. High praise for Ernest Miller.
Maybe comedic performers. Isn't
That's exactly yes.
Well, there was some comedy unintentionally throughout this show. Opening match was Disco Inferno and Alex Wright taking on the British Bulldog, and as the graphic read, Jim Neidhart. They had a spelling mistake right off the get-go, a future tribute to TNA. So the graphic key was all messed up. This was highlighted by Alex Wright wearing his Kenta Kobashi orange trunks.
They're not, I mean, yes, that's right. This was very funny. Sorry, just on the topic of the spelling mistakes. WWE.com had a really good one recently where they advertised the Icon String appearing on the Ultimate Warrior tribute show.
The Icon String.
Yeah.
Well, they might not have, but maybe they don't have the rights. The singer has imposed his intellectual property on
his new gimmick.
WWE. He's coming in as String.
The man called String.
Yeah.
The mysterious string, you know?
The string versus the streak. That would have been vibes. Yeah. So a USA chant erupts here, which was very entertaining, given we had Alex Wright, the British Bulldog, and Jim Neidhart, who was coming off his run as part of the Canadian faction in the WWF. So I guess a big...
Yeah, who are they chanting for?
Disco, I guess. American Disco.
Were there two heel teams here?
That's what I was so confused with here was that... I mean, Alex Wright has always had a cult appeal to me. I mean, that fucking dance lives on in infamy to me. I always feel Alex Wright, I really enjoyed him as a kid. But yeah, we had two heel tag teams here. So granted, this crowd was pretty dead here, but yeah, very strange pairing here.
Why would you start the show off with two heel tag teams?
I don't know how much thought was put into it.
Didn't care.
I don't think this conversation happened at the production meeting.
I think they were just like, you know what, Bulldog, I guess people like Bulldog. The work in this match was fantastic.
This was actually a match that nearly ended the career of the British Bulldog because... This was the match because in the main event where the Warrior shows up, they had a trap door installed. Someone failed to alert the locker room, hey guys, there's a trap door in the ring. avoid bumping on it. And Bulldog took a nasty bump onto this trap door, contracted staph infection, where he ended up hospitalized for weeks on end after this. And this, I believe, was actually Bulldog's final match in WCW.
Wow.
He ended on a high note.
What a way to go out here. At least got the win. Tanay at one point referred to Jim Neidhart as Jim Neidville, and Heenan calls him on this for his mistake. Always fun. Bulldog took this cartwheel out of a monkey flip. That was probably the most athletic thing of this match. Neidhart, actually on the apron, points up in the air towards the crowd and yells, "Yes!" So,
Daniel Bryan.
Forget Daniel Bryan. Forget Eric Young, Diego Sanchez, Jim Neidhart, September 13th, 1998. There were "We Want Flair" chants as Jim Neidhart was biting the forehead of Disco Inferno. Then Neidhart hit this slingshot flying shoulder block that missed Disco.
So funny.
He sold it anyway. It was like, whatever. No one knows. No HD yet. And then Wright hits a missile dropkick off the top. And it finishes with Disco running into Alex Wright on the apron. Turns into a running power slam by British Bulldog, who pins him at 11 minutes, 54 seconds. Probably in agony. And would lead to British Bulldog having tons of health issues after this. Not good for a guy with a pill dependency as well. It was not a good night for the British Bulldog. But
picked
there you go.
Picked a really sad opener they did.
Very sad opener, like, I guess, in hindsight. This was and I don't know if other guys got hurt on this particular card, but that was a notorious story at the time, that no one knew about this trap door that they had installed underneath the ring.
That's insane to me.
So that was all I was watching for in this match, was what the bump was, and it was really hard to tell what it was.
There was a lot of hard bump. They had I guess they mic'd the ring in WCW, which is something I really liked, but there was a lot of hard bumps. You could tell there was very little give to that ring. My favorite spot of the match was Disco. I think they tried to do the old duck. They all tried to do the old anvil's gonna duck for a body press, and then Disco just ran into him with his stomach, and then Neidhart fell down and checked for blood a bunch. He was like, maybe my stomach's so hard, now I'm bleeding.
Fair to say that the Jim Neidhart British Bulldog run of 1998 in WCW, not their finest stuff. I mean, you go from that hot angle in the WWF and then WCW. I mean, they were nothing going for them at all during this particular time. Way, happy with this opener?
I thought it was actually pretty boring and just overall a fairly slow
12
match.
Minutes, I mean, these guys went. I mean, Jim Neidhart doesn't have to be doing 12 minutes of anything in 1998. Gene Okerlund is backstage, discusses a ugly rumor that Scott Steiner may not be fighting his brother Rick tonight. So he knocks on the door, and Buff Bagwell, in his NWO customized overalls.
So good.
Answers the door. Scott Steiner has ice on his back and a Band-Aid on his bicep, indicating that he might have been drug tested before this, you would think, right? This was exactly the same as John Jones had a Band-Aid on after 172 on Saturday. And they explained that their doctor, Dr. Cecil Schwartz, had a doctor's note saying that he is not cleared to wrestle. Okerlund accurately suspects that Scott Steiner is working with a Mark doctor. J.J. Dillon walks up to them, calls it bogus, and says if he doesn't wrestle tonight, he is banned for life from WCW. heavy stipulations.
Not just banned from life, he's banned from wrestling.
Banned from life.
Yeah, he was.
That would mean death, wouldn't it?
Banned from wrestling.
Banned from life? Oh, banned for life.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he's going to talk to every wrestling promoter and be like, this Steiner guy?
He's going to blackball.
No dice.
Yeah.
Past, present, future.
I love how when J.J. Dillon walked up, there's in this area, I don't know, I didn't watch, obviously, NWA in the 80s, but he's just so casual about, like, hey, Scott, if you you got to wrestle or we're going to ban you from wrestling. And Steiner's going nuts, and he's just like, all right, he walks away. It's just everyone mailed it in on this show. It's
calm
fantastic.
Demeanor. Chris Jericho's music hits, he comes out, they do the mock Goldberg entrance where they play off of a Spinal Tap here as he's saying, hello, Winston-Salem. He gets lost finding the entrance. They walk out of the building. Finally makes it to the ring. They cut to all these crowd shots and then cut to the pyro. People thinking Bill Goldberg's coming out, but instead it was a fake Bill Goldberg, which was 2 months before WWF did this with Dwayne Gill. So WCW ahead of the curve here on doing a mock Bill Goldberg deal.
It was great because the guy kind of at first looked a bit like Goldberg, and then you realized he was so much smaller. perfect casting on their part. I don't know if this was just Jericho, but man, so
clearly
good.
There were definitely, I would guarantee you, 100 people that to this day thought they saw Bill Goldberg get just destroyed by Chris Jericho on pay-per-view, and they thought I was there that night.
There were so many great touches in this match too, like when he spears him and yells like, "No, stop it!" And, like, so good.
The crowd is chanting bullshit as Jericho attacks him, as some of them are cluing in this is not Bill Goldberg. The fake version spears Chris Jericho, who pops right up, boots him in the face, is stomping him, lion tamer, wins at a minute 15, and then holds up the television title and the bogus fake title that the Goldberg character wore to the ring. And Tony Schiavone just concludes that this man is an idiot.
That was great.
This is one of the highlights on the show for me.
This was Jericho and, of course, the cat, best parts of the show.
Yeah, this is very funny. He got a lot of heat for this, and I'm surprised to hear that this was before Goldberg. So, you know, maybe you can attribute that gimmick to Chris Jericho as well.
So this whole, you know, whether TNA and WWE are copying each other, this goes back years and years and years.
Plus he had that great ponytail, which now apparently is in fashion.
That is true.
The man ponytail.
Absolutely. Rick Steiner is on the WWE website with the late Lee Marshall, who just passed away this Sunday, and Chad Demiani discussing what a horrible day this is for his parents to watch. Does anyone believe that their parents spent $29.95 on Fall Brawl 1998? I'm sure Rick, as a good son, would have called them and said, "No, we're doing a stupid angle. Just skip it. We're going to do another match down the road." Heenan sarcastically says after this cutaway, "What an interesting conversation." Just buries this. Mike Tenay is then the most obviously just planned angle here. We have Mike Tenay here for WCW International Television, as if that's how we would identify it for our affiliates, with Scott and Steve Armstrong. Maybe their only interview time in WCW history.
And welcome back, everyone, to WCW International Television. I'm Mike Tenay, joined at this time by the Armstrong brothers, Scott and Steve. Steve, let's talk about the tag team picture in WCW at this point. Things are really heating up.
Listen, stop this right here. Why do they get all the time? I'm the world karate champion in this business. I'm the three-time world karate.
Ernest, this isn't the time or place. I'm trying to have an interview with the Armstrongs.
Maybe it's not, but I need to get some TV time to let the people know just how great I am.
Hey, look, brother, we never get an interview, so do you mind just show a little class and step off?
I'll tell you what, wrestler, WCW, I'll show you some class.
Good.
Thank you.
Let's give it another shot if we can, guys, okay, if you don't mind.
What's your problem, man, huh?
And Ernest Miller walks up to them saying he needs television time. The Armstrongs come back complaining they never get television time and then get attacked from behind. The Armstrongs were so far down the totem pole that as they get attacked, they don't even get the match for their own revenge angle. It's Norman Smiley, who just happened to be in the area, who walks in and says, "What's your problem?" And that was our setup for Ernest Miller, Norman Smiley on Fall Brawl.
And those sidekicks that, like, barely got above the thigh. I think there were thigh sidekicks, and the Armstrongs were like, "Oh my god, I was knocked out by a kind of a sidekick to the thigh."
Scott Armstrong has gotten more of a run in his current role as a WWE referee than I think his time in WCW. Outside of your Saturday Night viewers out there, where he was a staple, Scott and Steve.
Yeah, competitive matches. I remember one time they were like, "There's his finisher, a roll-up." It was like, no one could get out of that roll-up.
Norman Smiley and Ernest Miller, which was Dylan's second favorite performer on this show.
Exactly.
Miller says, he gets on the microphone and says, by law, he must inform Norman Smiley that I am a three-time karate world champion. And he says, since you're a brother, I'm going to give you 5 seconds to leave.
Yeah, it got racial for some reason there.
Yeah, man. He was, you know, brother looking out for another brother. There was a funny story, actually, at the time where, I mean, this was kind of the heel character of Ernest Miller, but way back, right around this time, WCW was talking with Don Fry about coming in, and he came backstage, and Don Fry was apparently around Ernest Miller, and Miller decided to inform him that, you know, in a real fight, I would kill you.
Oh, my
something
God.
To that effect.
Oh,
and Don Fry laughed at this man,
yeah.
And... anyway, it ended up, like, Ernest Miller was very, very tight with Eric Bischoff. That was kind of how he got into this company. He taught his kid karate, and anyway, Don Fry was not given a contract and brought in. But this was a kind of, I guess, an extension of Ernest Miller's character. Much, no question, a much better heel.
Yeah.
Just the generic karate practitioner that he was when he was brought into WCW. And a very good talker, I thought, at the time. There was a super kick on the floor to Norman Smiley, who then got sent into the guardrail. Tanay explains that Miller is trained in karate, aikido, and taekwondo. And then Miller twists on the top and barely hits this kick off the top. And then a spinning roundhouse kick on the mat pins Norman Smiley at 5 minutes. And then Miller cuts a promo after the match calling himself the greatest.
It's amazing. He also hit the Trouble in Paradise about four times, you know?
He was the originator.
He's the originator of Trouble in Paradise. And there was a Muay Thai plum counter to a spinning backdrop in this match, which I think...
This was beautiful. No Rich holds Franklin barred 1998 action here. Maybe Ernest Miller called up Kofi one day and, you know, as a fellow brother,
you can
I'm going to give you the Trouble in Paradise.
And Kofi just cried.
There's one point where Miller's in the corner begging for mercy, and then he raises his fist to signify black power. As like sort of a sign of
God, this is a heavily race baited angle.
Just, you know, two black people, and then he smiles before kicking Smiley in the gut. I just love that.
Maybe that's what he was channeling.
He was
his black power.
I never understood what people, because I remember around this time people would always be like, "Man, he's such a good he's a good promo, but he's a terrible worker." And I'd be like, "What are you talking about? He's all right." And then I watched this match. I was like, "Oh yeah, yeah, yeah."
Not, I mean, he was designed for a certain level. I think. Let's just leave it at that. Then we got a, you know, from two brothers having a match with Norman Smiley and Ernest Miller, we went to the brother versus brother video package. This split occurred in February at Super Brawl. In February. We were now getting around to the match in September. And still we're going to prolong this another month. When Scott joined the New World Order, they then did a fake reunion. And then Rick says, "If you swerve me, brother, I will hunt you down until you die," which is the very definition of hunting. And says, then the match was canceled at Road Wild when Scott Steiner came out with a fake injury and J.J. Dillon made the match on the spot for Fall Brawl, to which Scott then tore his, I guess, neck brace off right there at Road Wild. So the match was never occurring at Road Wild. They were going to save it for the big Fall Brawl audience. So here we have Scott Steiner accompanied by Buff against Rick Steiner. And I am sure there was a time in the early 90s where people would have really enjoyed this match. And they did have singles matches together. At this point in 1998, I mean, Scott Steiner, much more show, much less go, I would say, was the best description of who was once christened White Thunder when he turned heel with this new look, new hair, the heel Scott Steiner. They had a big exchange to start the match. The crowd was actually quite into this at the start, ending with this huge lariat. This crowd loved Rick Steiner. I don't know what it was, but they were...
They loved him till the very end. Like,
I don't know what it was about Rick Steiner. Never a guy that I was a huge fan of, especially as a singles, but yeah, this crowd was super into Rick Steiner here. They fought on the floor. They get back into the ring. Rick goes for a belly-to-belly, and Scott hits him with a low blow behind Mark Curtis's back, so Scott gets the advantage. Then Rick blocks this double underhook suplex, hits a DDT. This place goes apeshit for this lariat. Then grabs Bagwell on the apron and sends him into the post. Scott attacks Rick, and Buff is just laying there. And they're bringing up his legitimate broken neck that he suffered at the hands of Rick on a live Thunder. Still a haunting image I have. Back in April of that year. So he's just laying there. And laying there. And then all of a sudden, the crowd starts chanting bullshit, suspecting this is an angle. The announcers, I got the impression that they weren't even told if this was an angle or not. They went from assuming this was an angle to then really getting it over to the fact they got it over so well, I can't imagine they thought it was real. Or sorry, that this was a storyline. I thought these announcers were just completely clueless as to what was happening here and didn't know if this was a storyline or not.
I just thought, like, if this isn't a storyline, then these gurney guys would have probably rushed out of there instead of just, like, walking so casually, and they looked so bored when they came out.
I got to disagree. There's this one EMT that I thought deserved an Oscar for this performance. He bolted down there, sprinting to the ring, and just he looked very careful, even holding this guy's neck in place. At one point, Rick was like, you know, shouting, if you're lying, I'm going to kill you. And this EMT was yelling at Rick Steiner, back off, Rick, back off. Like, he treated this like he was somebody maybe I wasn't sure whether or not they clued him in as to whether or not this was just an angle. But I thought this was actually done really well.
Heenan brings up, you know, he's always concerned about people coming up from behind him as he's commentating ringside, which was back in 1996, after Heenan had had neck surgery, on a Clash of the Champions card, which was live, Brian Pillman came up from behind and grabbed him.
Oh, yeah.
And Heenan thought it was some fan or something. So right on live television, Heenan yells, "What the fuck are you doing?" And that was a reference to that. And the announcers are just giving this like a very serious kind of presentation. Schiavone and Heenan are mentioning their own neck surgeries. Tony Schiavone, I guess, went under the knife.
Took a bad bump.
Neck surgery. Too many times of looking to the back for the run-in, I guess. Eric Bischoff is out. They follow him into the back. They explained, folks, we are keeping the cameras here on Buff because we are not ready for our next match. And Buff is yelling at someone to call his mom. Tony notes that they have wonderful hospitals in this part of the country. Thank God. And then Rick is walking back after they close the ambulance doors. And then the doors pelt open. Scott and Buff jump out, attack Rick as Buff is laughing and calls Rick stupid. As they walk off, Heenan says, "I legitimately thought he was hurt." And they cut to the next match. It's like this massive angle. Tony Schiavone was outraged. He was so upset here and summed it up by saying, "There is a new form of being a jerk, and it's called Buff." He was disgusted at this. I thought they got this angle across really well, but at the end of it, it was just...
It seemed like a lot of work for a beatdown that was just, like, what, two
like
punches?
Like 8 seconds, yeah.
Yeah, two
and
punches.
And they did a lot of these with Buff Bagwell at the time. There was... They had him, I remember on a Nitro, they came out and he gave the most like tear-filled promo in a wheelchair after his neck surgery. And it was like this crowd, I think it was at the Georgia Dome, like they were loving this guy after he came back from an injury. And then it turned into a swerve where he attacks Rick Steiner. It's like they constantly went to that well. And I think you really had an opportunity with Buff Bagwell after that neck surgery to turn this guy, but they couldn't resist the swerve. And they did this constantly with the guy.
I don't know, but I feel like Bagwell would be over for 2 weeks as a face, but it's just like, you just look at this guy. He just looks like such a cocky asshole. Like, he just looked, it'd be like the Randy Orton thing. Like, you know, it made a lot of sense to them trying to make him like the badass baby face.
It was those sideburns and that hair.
oh man, he's so funny. Those overalls, the hat, oh man. Him and Steiner were hilarious on this show.
They could have sold those overalls, I think, at WCW shows. Imagine kids going around with those overalls.
I looked on eBay for the overalls immediately. That's why I was during the whole thing. I was like, okay, cool. This is going to go on for a while. And I started.
You could buy him if you bought, like, you know, a day rate with him. He'll wear them on. He'll put them on for you.
Sure. Cowboys, whatever it is, website that he's on. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. Male gigolo, Buff Bagwell.
Juventud Guerrera and Silver King were up next for the Cruiserweight title. I imagine this was one of those matches that was just a legendary pay-per-view bonus match for the Cruiserweight title that was just thrown onto this card.
It was a match where they could put on in the background as the announcers tried to complain about the previous angle.
As Schiavone prefaces it by saying, "I do not want to talk about what we just saw," and proceeds to talk about it for the next 5 minutes. And wants Scott Steiner and Buff Bagwell to both be fined. What they have done has to be resolved with monetary loss.
Well, at least
for
the three
men.
Grand that they had to call the ambulance for.
Absolutely.
That's 100%. $3,000.
Yeah, this was a, you know, they may have been unionized, those
for sure.
Medical staff.
We're looking at $10,000 for sure.
There was a springboard into a Hurricane Rana by Juventud. Silver King came back with a Tilt-A-Whirl backbreaker. Lots of great stuff here between these two. I just felt the crowd really wasn't into this, and I don't think really bought Silver King too much as a challenger or were even familiar with him. There was a flying cross body to the floor, and the first thing on Bobby Heenan's mind was, "You will not see Pete Sampras do that." fuck you, tennis. Like, is this such a non sequitur?
It might have been a popular thing of the evening. Like, was maybe it was like a Pete Sampras match that night or something.
Perhaps. Maybe, I don't know, Wimbledon was going on, I guess.
We could look, but like, I don't know, maybe it's just like, tennis, they figure the biggest rival. Yeah, exactly.
Silver King hit a super kick for the two count, where Heenan called him the King Fish. And then there was a reverse Frankensteiner off the second turnbuckle for a two by Hoovy. And then a Hoovy driver was countered with a roll up by Silver King for a two count. Silver King then missed a moonsault off the top, scoop slam, and then Hoovy hit a 450. There was about an inch that Silver King was away from the turnbuckle, and Hoovy hit this perfectly and pinned him 8 minutes, 36 seconds. Fine match for what it was. I just think the crowd just kind of viewed this as just sort of a filler match, but this is one of the better matches on the show, I thought.
Yeah, I thought it was the best match on the show, and I actually thought Hoovy was very over during this period. And I remembered Silver King as just kind of like a filler character type thing, like on a Saturday night. But man, how effortlessly he hit that cross body to the floor for a guy who, like, legitimately, like, he looked like he was about like 5'8 and 230. Like,
there were so many of those Mexican luchadores that came over, like Super Calo and La Parca, that were just so talented, but it kind of thrown into the same role Silver King was, that, I mean, you wouldn't really, the core audience just really wasn't too familiar with these guys at all.
Yeah, and they did not want to invest anything in getting these guys over. I think, like, I've watched a Super Calo match. It was a great match, and then the next week, like, Scott Hall pinned him in like 8 seconds with like not even the razor's edge. It was like a fallaway slam.
Not worthy of the edge. You're a fallaway slam kind of guy. Lee Marshall and Demiani there with Conan, and this was during the time when the storyline was that Scott Hall has a drinking problem.
This is great, too.
This was his character at the time. He got drunk, and he would wrestle matches. So Conan's explaining that Scott Hall is going through drama in his personal life. Hall walks in and proceeds to he's about to call him a Mexican jumping bean, but gets cut off, spills his drink on Conan. And as Scott Hall, the heel here, is attacking Conan, we cut to crowd shots with Scott Hall t-shirts and cheering for Scott Hall. Great direction on this show. And then a video on the Raven Saturn feud, and this match would be if Raven won, he would have the services of Perry Saturn, and if Perry won, the flock would disband. And they showed a video that featured broken fingers, challenges back and forth, a Nick Dinsmore cameo on Monday Nitro,
yeah,
pre-Eugene, and Raven sending the flock to attack Saturn and breaking Saturn's fingers.
I felt like the crowd was really behind Saturn, and then he started talking, and then they were like, ooh.
Yeah.
Like, that guy, not even as a promo, just as a public speaker, is terrible.
Yeah, before the match, they announced that Canyon will be handcuffed at ringside as J.J. Dillon and Doug Dillinger handcuff him. Raven cuts a promo on Saturn being an embarrassment. Saturn says, Raven doesn't have any honor. And Saturn, I mean, what a fashionista in 1998, wearing his bandana, shades, and leather vest.
He looked like a gay niche here, for sure.
He looked like
either a huge Judas Priest fan who just didn't get what he was putting across, or just a leather guy.
Underrated fashion. Even when he joined the Radicals and he would have that leather cap on his head, that was just some great choices. I would have loved to have watched this man just shopping for his TV look. Crowd, about halfway through this match, when they actually believed Saturn could win this match, really got into this. There was a tope by Saturn over the top to the floor. Lodi was in the corner with all his signs, and this was during the whole Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky scandal, so he had a bunch of Bill Clinton references that he had on his Bristol board at the time. Raven applied this sleeper. Saturn got out with a jawbreaker, and then Scotty Riggs, Horace Hogan, and Sick Boy, a bunch of trivia questions as members of the flock, brought a table to ringside behind the referee's back. Kidman then climbed to the top and, instead of attacking Saturn, hit Raven with a missile dropkick, and the crowd went nuts for this as Kidman turns on the flock, and then they chased after Kidman through the crowd. Saturn hit a Death Valley driver to Raven. They got the first of what was a bunch of near falls as Lodi and Canyon are then distracting the referee.
They're chanting Saturn. Saturn fires up with a bunch of suplexes, hits a leg drop off the two, a Falcon Arrow for a two count, then applies the Rings of Saturn. Lodi breaks that up. There's a low blow to Raven. Lodi gets crotched on the top turnbuckle, and then Saturn gets thrown into referee Mickey J. Canyon then gets the key from Mickey J to unlock the handcuffs, hits a flatliner to Saturn. Just a ton of kickouts here from near falls, with the crowd popping huge for them. And then finally, Saturn gets back into the ring. He takes an even flow DDT for another near fall. Saturn recovers, hits the Death Valley driver. 14 minutes, 4 seconds, and I thought the final, like, 6-7 minutes of this were really, really solid. Like, the crowd was really into this.
Yeah, it was amazing, and especially the even flow. They did a great thing, too, which I really like, is when they don't do the both guys are knocked out. You know when the guy hits his finisher, and then they give it 5 seconds, and then he puts the arm over, and then it's a near fall. But you kind of figure out, like, okay, well, he's not going to. But he hit the even flow, immediately pins him, immediately gets near. Even I just forgot what happened. I was like, oh, wow, the match didn't end, you know? And there were great near falls, and yeah, it was a great match. I really, really liked it.
They gave Saturn a ton here, a ton of kickouts, and a really good match. Crowd was really into the near falls, and it felt like the big culmination of a long angle.
Yeah, these guys worked really well together at the time, and this was certainly, including his eliminators run, this might have been like the peak for Perry Saturn, especially as a singles performer.
Yeah.
Kind of forgotten during this 1998 period in WCW, but he was really positioned well against the flock and getting this big win at the time. I thought this was the best match on the show, I felt.
Well, because he was a guy that Heenan really made, and even before, like, comparing him to Mad Dog Vachon throughout the match, mm-hmm. and just saying, like, this guy's dangerous, look at this guy's moveset, no one can compare to him, he's amazing. They really seem like they're going to push him. And even before this, Heenan would always compare him to Arn Anderson. Like, he wouldn't compare Raven to Flair in the flock, but he would always be like, Perry Saturn is the enforcer of this group, he's the muscle, he's the only guy I really be scared of. It was great.
Just needed a mop.
Yeah. And then he got a mop, and then it took off for him.
They provided an update on Jim Duggan, who at the time had announced on television that he had cancer, and they gave an update here that he had undergone an operation where they removed the tumor that was the size of a football. I can't even process that. A football-sized tumor? Holy Christ.
That's sad.
Yeah.
There's a lot of sad stuff on the show, yeah.
Well,
Bulldog's career is over.
He turned out okay. I mean,
yeah.
Happy ending, at least, at the end of this. But that's crazy. If I was informed I had a football-sized tumor, doubt would be setting in, I feel.
It'd be kind of a dickish doctor to be like, this tumor's crazy big. Look, it's a football size.
Think of a football.
Like, he's just making fun of you with the tumor at that point, where you're like, you could have just told me I have a tumor.
There was highlights of the cage match on Nitro. This classic WCW steel cage match, which built up to a singles match, no gimmick, between Kurt Hennig and Dean Malenko. That was on Nitro. Malenko had him beat, but the referee was out. So, of course, steel cage match, there's a run-in where they use bolt cutters. Rick Rude comes in and attacks Malenko, and they go to slam the door on Malenko's head, but Arn Anderson makes the save, and this crowd went crazy. This was this constant build up at the time was Dean Malenko and Chris Benoit trying to reform the Horsemen, but Arn Anderson refused, and this would lead up to the next night on Nitro where they would reform the Horsemen, and that was Ric Flair's return. So that was the storyline at the time, and we had Kurt Hennig with Rick Rude in his corner taking on Dean Malenko. Huge chance here of We Want Flair. They brought up the angle from the prior year's Fall Brawl where Hennig had turned on the Horsemen, and Heenan is just stunned here that Mike Tenay can remember the date of the prior yeah. year's Fall Brawl.
And he just starts making fun of him for doing any research.
Yes. Dean Malenko attacks Hennig and Rick Rude on the floor, wraps the right knee of Hennig, which had a knee brace on at the time, around the post. Heenan is explaining how hard you can work out, but no matter how hard you work out, you can't make your eyes tough, as Kurt Hennig rakes the eyes of Dean Malenko.
And they're all just like, good move. They don't recognize that it's illegal at all.
Yeah. No.
It's a good move, man.
Yeah,
solid move.
Great. Malenko goes back to attacking the right knee. There's this great moment where they fight on the floor, and the cameraman is walking back, and all of a sudden you see his left foot appear in the shot as he falls over backwards, and they just quickly cut to the next cameraman. This was this great stumble. There was a knee bar by Malenko. Rude then pulls him to the ropes. Hennig nails him in the back, goes for the Hennig Plex, but that gets blocked. Malenko hits the Hennig Plex, so Rick Rude breaks it up, for the DQ at 7:39. Thank you for your $29.95. No resolve here. Rick Rude was like sweating a gasket here through his shirt.
It was amazing.
Like I thought this guy had like a bottle of water been poured on this man.
Yeah, I thought for he had just like oiled himself up or something for no reason.
Arn then runs out. They attack him as well. The crowd thinks Rick is coming back. He is not. They attack the left arm of Arn and they state, oh, this is, I don't know why I found this so funny, but as they're attacking the man with the bad left arm to begin with, and then they further do damage to it, and Tony Schiavone, what a disadvantage Arn will have in that arm wrestling challenge on Thunder.
Yeah, they built up to the arm wrestling challenge on
Thunder. The man who had to retire because of an arm injury is going to be booked in an arm wrestling challenge on Thunder, and they note that Ric Flair is coming back on Thunder. They just casually mentioned that here. So I guess it was to make people think he's coming back on Thunder, and the surprise would be he would be back on Nitro.
Smart booking.
Whatever logic. So, yeah. Anyway, Halloween Havoc promo. And then, sorry, Wei, any thoughts on Kurt Hennig, Dean Malenko 2?
It just, it was pretty disappointing just considering the participants. It never really got going and ended with a really lazy finish.
Yeah, Malenko was so good. Kurt Hennig, I didn't remember that he wore NWO shorts for a period.
Yeah, this was his short phase. Like, fuck the singlet. I guess. I don't know. This was, I don't know. I mean, a lot of people remember Kurt Hennig really fondly, but I think that's overlooking his WCW tenure, which I can't say he had really anything of, like, you talk about guys mailing it in. I feel there was a time quickly in where Kurt Hennig, that's exactly what his WCW run was. Just a guy that I think was just doing as little as possible.
I mean, and him and Rude had such great potential.
I'm sure they had a great time together.
Rude as a manager was great. I just love how he was like a manager, but just obviously not. Like, he had already, when he came out, his shirt was untucked and his tie was like loosened. Was like, this guy's just going
to
punch a guy in the face.
He was ready to get ready to get involved. So Vincent then comes out with Scott Hall, who's got a drink and had to act as though he was drunk. I can't confirm if he was or not. hell of a method actor, potentially. And he is part of the tag team champions at the time. And the storyline was that he had been spending too much time on the beach and playing golf and was ordered to get back to wrestling and struggles to climb the turnbuckles. And they note that he is in the wrong ring. Because the referee, of course, it's the two-ring setup at Fall Brawl, and this guy's in the wrong ring. And Scott Hall does his survey promo as he's slurring his speech. Vincent is concerned. The survey deal was always weird as this, like, heel cuts a promo on, like, pretty much how lame WCW is to the people that bought tickets. But the people pop biggest for the Wolfpack as Schiavone and Bobby Heenan collectively do the howling noise as they cheer for the Wolfpack. This was so lame.
Or is everybody here at Fall Brawl to see that lame Wolfpack?
And then Conan comes out, does his standard promo. Conan was very over at this time.
Yeah, I forgot about that. And I forgot all his catchphrases.
Yeah, like when the Wolfpack was formed, like to me, the biggest benefactor was Conan, who was just, man, had a routine very much like Road Dogg, who just got over with this catchphrase that was crowd participation and was very popular at the time in 1998. He felt like the cool member of the Wolfpack, with all due respect to Kevin Nash and Lex Luger rocking the FUBU at that time.
Oh, yeah, Luger rocking FUBU was amazing. It's just old guys in T-shirts and Conan, really. Like, Conan was the one that made sense that he was wearing a T-shirt because he was also
cool
wearing
at that time.
Exactly, and like fedoras and stuff. Very ahead of his time.
Top hat, yeah. So, I didn't understand this. Scott Hall is drunk, but when the bell rings, he can wrestle. Like, is that what we took away from this?
He's like the drunken master from martial arts where you drink to get better.
Like, I didn't understand this.
He was luring him in.
Like, how bad is Conan then if he can't beat this guy who's fucking drunk?
That's what I took away from the match. Where it was
sell
like,
for this guy.
Yeah, it's the whole time it's just like this guy who like is way more concerned with the beer and then like, oh, he just got off golfing and he's going to give Conan like a serious run for his money. You know what I mean?
The timing of this as well, if you recall, if you were a wrestling fan in the fall of 1998, they were doing this angle with Scott Hall, who legitimately has litany of alcoholic problems, we'll say. And over at the WWF at the time, they were doing the same deal with Road Warrior Hawk at the time, where he was having a drinking problem in storyline and ultimately fell off the Titantron, presumably to his death at the time. Some fine programming in late 98. The match starts with Scott Hall going to the other ring. So Conan and the referee come over. Then they go back to the original ring. Hall is just wrestling normally here. Conan slaps him around. Crowd is very hot for Conan. There was a somersault into a clothesline by Conan. Hall's gets stomped down in between the two rings, where he falls down in between them. And then Hall climbs under the ring, comes from behind, but Conan catches him with a punch. Hall is then on the floor, takes a drink, gets the advantage, traps the arms from behind Conan in the ring, and then Conan eventually reverses. Scott Hall must have hit what was like the 40th low blow of this card by this point. Then he applies an abdominal stretch where he reaches and grabs his drink while this is applied.
That was pretty cool.
Conan could not look more foolish as Conan's drinking here during this abdominal stretch. Heenan suggests that Conan do an airplane spin because he's hammered. And Tony Schiavone, in like 100% seriousness, agrees. That would be really smart right now to an intoxicated Scott Hall. Crowd then got distracted by something going on in the audience. And then Hall comes back with a back suplex off the turnbuckle. He calls for the outsider edge, but goes to take another drink. Turns around. The drink gets kicked out of his hands, and Conan hits the X-Factor into the tequila sunrise. This match went 12 minutes and 3 seconds. Probably could have gone half that time. And Tanay asks if he is tapping out or calling for another round. This was as many drunk jokes as Tanay, Heenan, and Schiavone could come up with. And the highlight was then just cutting to a bunch of crowd shots where Heenan remarked, "That woman has no teeth."
Bobby Heenan's might be my favorite comedian.
Yeah.
Is it ironic that he finished him with the tequila sunrise?
Maybe a little bit. It was a coincidence that Bobby Heenan a few years later would appear on The Law drunk.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So Michael Buffer then, as we move on from that, Michael Buffer's in the ring, one of the highest paid men at the time, to do our introductions for the big War Games main event. He explains the finish can come at any time. So therefore, whoever draws the first two numbers is actually at an advantage. That would have been the best finish. If DDP
got
the pinfall in 3 minutes and the rest of the guys didn't even come out, the match is over. So our teams are Kevin Nash, Sting, and Lex Luger representing the Wolfpack, Hogan, Bret Hart, and Stevie Ray representing the NWO Black and White, and then DDP, Roddy Piper, and the Ultimate Warrior representing Team WCW. What a cavalcade.
And the little effort that they put into Bret Hart as a whole, where like
the worst.
He didn't even have like, he didn't even change his singlet. His theme song took like 8 seconds to make, for sure.
Bret Hart came out and he had this look on his face like, fuck this. Like, you could not read anything more other than like just a waste of his time, this time in WCW.
Like, he was getting a bunch of money.
Hey,
but,
that's awesome. Good for him. I'm glad he got paid for this time. DDP and Bret Hart started the match. 5 minute period. Just the absolute basics of this 5 minutes is all you can pretty much describe this as. Crowd like knows not to take anything seriously until everyone's out. They announce here that Sting has a match against Goldberg, begging the question as to what does this match represent to him at all when he has a match tomorrow night to get ready for. They go through just the match. Heenan gets upset here because they had the countdown clock on the screen and then they took it down, and Heenan is upset that they're keep the countdown clock on the screen. He's yelling to the back.
In a few moments, you know, and I said earlier, maybe wrong. There's
1 minute remaining in this time period.
There we go. Keep that on the screen. Keep that number there. Are you directing now? Here's a 1, 2, only a 2 count. Okay, go wide. Shut up.
Schiavone points out all of the changes to this year's War Games. There's a referee inside the ring. The teams aren't at ringside. I don't think Schiavone was happy with these changes to his beloved War Games that he's called so many of. Stevie Ray was out third. It now turns into 2 minute periods. So Bret and Stevie Ray double team Page. Sting was out fourth. Crowd lost their shit here for Sting.
Oh, my God.
Also the debut of T-Shirt Sting.
T-Shirt Sting, which would follow him well into TNA, just went crazy here as he attacked Stevie Ray. Felt like the biggest reaction on the show so far. Roddy Piper was out fifth. He goes to – they did this wide shot where he's biting Stevie Ray, but it looks like he just – pulled him in and started, like, tonguing him. Like, it just looks like these two were making out in the middle of this ring. Luger, with a tank top and black jeans, was out, number six. Then Kevin Nash came out seventh. He got a pyro explosion as he,
The worst one I've ever, like,
like it was like some just weird sound effect. Light jog to the ring for Kevin Nash.
With his long hair just flowing beautifully.
I know. This was one of the most athletic entrances of his career. Big response as he goes after Piper. I guess very relevant given their recent Twitter beef.
Yeah.
And then Hulk Hogan sneaks out before the clock expires. He gets into the ring to attack Kevin Nash and Piper with a slapjack. Then he attacks Sting and Luger with it. Everyone's laid out except for Hogan and Stevie Ray. He gave two leg drops to Kevin Nash, who just played dead.
Yeah,
for the rest of the night, Kevin Nash was out cold. There was more offense here. This slapjack was way more than the one-finger finish we'd get a few months from now, but Kevin Nash sold it just the same. Then it got fun. Then it got WCW-level creative. Smoke began to fill the ring. And the Warrior appears in the ring, coming through this trap door, and Hogan knocks him down from behind. More smoke covers the ring, and Hogan appears with his jacket, but the Ultimate Warrior has disappeared. And then the Ultimate Warrior runs out from the back.
Amazing.
Mind games at their utmost. So the Disciple, Ed Leslie, pulls Hogan out of the ring, and they lock the door with a padlock to keep the Warrior in the cage and Hogan out. So Warrior then kicks through the cage mesh, escapes and goes after them in the aisle as security is separating them. This leaves Stevie, who hits Brett with the slapjack by mistake, runs into a diamond cutter. Everyone is still selling that they're out, and DDP pins Stevie Ray at 20 minutes, 6 seconds.
Hogan's spear has cost him his shot.
That man ripped the cage apart with his bare hands, pulled chain link fence off a post, and made it out of that cage. How does he do it?
Warrior's got to get back to the cage if he wants to win this thing.
Slapjack. He nailed somebody with it.
Hey, for the diamond cutter on Stevie Ray!
It's yours. It's yours if you want it.
One, two, Diamond Dallas! Diamond Dallas! Diamond Dallas wins!
The winner of the War Games, DDP Diamond Dallas Page!
He gets the title shot against Goldberg at Halloween Havoc!
Well, he worked his tail off!
This was met with boos throughout the arena as DDP gets his shot against Bill Goldberg at Halloween Havoc and then goes to celebrate in the crowd. What a shitty main event.
That was the worst. It was the worst match I've seen in a very long time. But it was like Sting, Luger, all these icons just
I couldn't get
dead.
Mad at it. It
just
was
dead.
The smoke, it was like, I can't get mad at this.
It's pretty open about what it is.
Yeah.
And then at one point, Heenan's like, look at the shape the Warrior's in. He'll rip this whole cage apart. He'll kill everyone here. Like, it's amazing.
So this technically was 50% of the Ultimate Warrior's WCW matches.
Yeah, the debut.
This run.
A really hot crowd, but just some really messy booking. And
it was amazing how over some of these performers were at the time. Where, I mean, today you get the sense that, you know, you kind of have your crowd favorites in certain cities, but man, like your Stings and your Nashes, like you can't deny that there were pockets of the country where these guys were so over at this time. Like Sting, especially in this match. My God, were they hot for him.
Well, it was just like, it's just why the matches seemed like such a waste. Like, you could have had like four separate matches and maybe kick off, I don't know, Bulldog, Neidhart, Alex Wright, Disco. And you could have had like huge matches on this card. Three triple threats, even. Just throw Stevie Ray in there, whatever, as a manager. Like, huge matches, but they threw it away with. And once again, once the smoke cleared, you knew the match was going to be over in 1 second.
When the dust settled, literally.
Yeah, exactly.
War Games 1998. Well,
Did this live up to expectations, Dylan? This,
yes, it did.
This stroll down memory lane to a fall brawl. 1998. What a brawl it was in the main event, setting up Bill Goldberg and DDP.
It was, yeah, for me, I don't know. I really liked it. I was talking about this before, but I watched half of it up to the Saturn Raven match at a house with friends, and that I was prepared to give it like a 9 out of 10 because of how fun that was. And then I watched it alone, and 1 out of 10, so I'll average it out to a 5.
Wow, that's amazing how things level themselves out.
If you're going to watch WCW, you got to do it with friends.
I think that's the best way to enjoy things and enjoy it for what it was. I'm sure, Wei, one day you and I will sit down and we'll watch TNA Sacrifice 2014, we'll have a great time.
I won't be doing that.
Wei, what do you give this event?
Well, I did watch it alone, so maybe my opinion is skewed, but I think I give it maybe a 2.5 out of 10. 2, probably.
I'll give it a solid 3. We'll be the negative ones of this.
Oh wow!
This
so
triangle.
both of yours add up to mine, literally.
There. Well, there you go. You get a mixed bag. Maybe there's some people out there. We're gonna go to the feedback thread right now. Can you stick around for feedback?
Yeah, of course.
All right. Well, let's find out what the public has to say about Fall Brawl 1998. We'll start off with Chris in Ottawa. How could anyone not want to watch and talk about a show fabled to be the worst WCW pay-per-view of them all? I don't know if that's fair to
say. Yeah, I don't know about
that. I am sure I saw probably 5 more worse pay-per-views in 1999 alone. I mean, look up Slamboree 99 or something. I will take this over that.
When it was like they had the star power back then, but the creative was terrible. But when the beautiful thing happened where they had no star power and the creative was terrible, that's when. Like all of 2000, 2001.
So many matches were emblematic of WCW's ass-backwards booking. Pay-per-views are supposed to serve as the culmination and payoff for these angles. Instead, the show is chock-full of non-finishes, schmozzes, in a mistaken attempt to convince you to come back for Nitro or Thunder or Halloween Havoc to find out where it all leads. And it wasn't just the booking. The performances were, by and large, atrocious. The only saving grace for the show was courtesy of our old pal Chris Jericho and his crack security staff with an assist from Bobby Heenan. But still, it wasn't nearly enough, was it? I award this show a shit out of 10.
A shit?
Wow. That would...
this guy...
I guess literally that would be a 1.
This guy just... yeah?
2, actually.
Depends on what he ate earlier, I guess.
The literal or the figurative of what it represents.
We go to Robert, who says, I can't really pick the best match of the night, but it certainly wouldn't be the War Games match. First of all, it wasn't a War Games match, as there were pinfalls. It's been more than 10 years since I saw this, but I remember the War Games match being cluttered with poorly developed storylines and poorly promoted workers. The whole thing was a mess. If memory serves, this was also the final match before Juventud Guerrero's demotion of being a Cruiserweight champion, as he will lose it to Kidman shortly after this pay-per-view. That's too bad, because he was a very gifted performer. Not that Kidman was bad either, but it just didn't seem fair that Juve didn't have another chance at another non-transitional title run. That is unlike the one he had with the bullshit LWO angle. Oh, I know, the best part of the night. The best part of the night, sadly, was Chris Jericho versus a midget imitating Goldberg. Again, I stress, sadly.
Maybe Raven and Saturn not getting some love. I thought that match was pretty good on this show. Paul in the UK, there was so much wrong with this pay-per-view, even with the star-studded roster. While there was the potential for some good wrestling, it was buried under plugs for upcoming Thunders and really shoddy booking, plus really lazy video packages to set up matches with just overly long Raw clips with no commentary to explain the storylines. Mm-hmm. You know, like the basics. With the buff fake injury angle, Rick telling them to notify Judy got more of a pop from me than the actual reveal it was a fake. After all of that setup, all Scott and Buff got were a few more punches in on Rick, who wasn't even off his feet at the end of the angle. Very anticlimactic. Conan should never celebrate a win by hugging the referee. Just weird to see. Out of everything wrong with the main event, including Stevie Ray being in it, the most depressing was Brett being a bit player here as part of the NWO. Not that you could tell he was a member from his attire or appearance. And this less than a year after Montreal. Luckily, he had one eager fan at ringside who kept tapping him on the shoulder to turn around and pose for a photo.
Why were Hogan and Stevie Ray attacking Brett in this match?
They weren't attacking Brett.
They hit him with the slap chop.
Oh, they explained because on TV, Brett came and saved Lex Luger. So they were teasing problems there between Brett and Hogan. That never led to a match.
Yeah, and then Piper and Paige started fighting, and they were like, there's no teammates in this match. But like, why did you make teams? Why didn't it just be a 9-man free-for-all?
Yeah, give Stevie Ray a clear path to the title. Don't bog him down in this
exactly.
team
we need shit. To, we need Stevie Ray on the way up, you know?
We go to Chris from Wisconsin, who says, I'm not too familiar with WCW at any point, as I was a WWF fan. Anyway, watching this for the first time ever, I really liked this pay-per-view. Like the Bulldog Neidhart,
nice.
Alex Wright disco match, Miller and Smiley I fell asleep to, Snyder match I bought the finish only to be swerved, never seen a War Games match, and it reminded me of an Elimination Chamber match, minus the pods. Overall, I give the pay-per-view 8.5 fake typing guys out of 10. Not a bad way to kick off my viewing experience of WCW, although I know based on your podcast, it doesn't get better.
Based on our podcast, yes, spoiler alert, WCW goes out of business.
That guy really liked it.
Jaw Burr. That has to be a fake name, I would assume.
No.
From Baltimore, Maryland. Very clever. This show was terrible. Bulldog looked awful. If Crayola made a color based on his skin tone, it'd be called High Blood Pressure Crimson. The network version used Jericho's WWE theme. The edit started about a minute before his entrance. It sounded awful. I think 1998 was the peak of the arrow point sign. There were dozens of signs that said things like Big Sexy Junior above an arrow that pointed down at the holder. Someone held up a sign that read Ric Flair above a pair of arrows that pointed at the two people next to the sign holder. What's the point of an I'm standing between two Ric Flairs sign? The main event was really boring. It was probably 80% rest holds and selling the mysterious smoke. Awful. Two Wolfpack in the his house signs out of 10. I like feedback like that, that takes different observations from a pay-per-view.
It's got to be weird to see this 98 Jericho come up to his WWF theme.
Yeah, that would be a very odd. And in, I guess like that, not coming out with the pose where his back is to the crowd, just walking out gingerly to his WWF theme.
But I guess that Pearl Jam ripoff was like a bit too much alike. Like there's really no denying.
I wonder if they used Raven's theme in this.
I'm not sure. We go to DC, who says,
Daniel Cormier.
There was one match on the show that was worth the pay-per-view price alone, Raven versus Saturn. 15 or so years later, this is one of the few matches that I could still watch and still get goosebumps. The crowd was hot for this match, and the way they reacted for the Kidman dropkick on Raven, the DVD on Low-D through the table at ringside, and ultimately the finish served to highlight how great it was. Owen Canyon desperately trying to roll in to break up the final pin while handcuffed was tremendous. While Raven or Saturn would never really get the main event level after this, bar some tag matches on Nitro, I was a big fan of their contribution to WCW, and feel it often gets overlooked in terms of WCW success. Finally, Fall Brawl 98 reminds me why I love pro wrestling. The rest of the show can be below average to average or even terrible, but every now and again a storyline or a match will make you engage with it and emotionally invest in the finish. And years later, you can remember where you were when you rented the VHS copy, when you read the report on LordsOfPain.net, arguing with WWF fans at school that it was a good show, and the feeling is still the same.
Let's go to Poff Lord from Houston. The shitty early 90s style opening graphics really set the tone for this show. The announcer spent the first hour of the pay-per-view trying to explain the rules of the clusterfuck that was the 1998 version of the War Games match, and they probably only called 30% of the actual in-ring action. Bobby Heenan seemed quite disinterested in this event and appeared to have mailed it in, a far cry from his outstanding work in the WWE, but I don't blame him since the quality of what he was watching was also a far cry from WWE. It was the worst War Games match I've seen, and it was filled with a bunch of corny spots, especially the two different warriors. There's no way in hell that Silver King was a cruiserweight, and Rick Rude didn't look so ravishing while profusely sweating in his oversized dress shirt. I hope that Raven and Saturn would have had a serious eyebrow-piercing mishap, but no luck there. My favorite parts were the entrances to the Jericho fake Goldberg match and Scott Hall asking for his drink while applying the abdominal stretch. I give the show 2 Conan lame late 90s rap references out of 10.
Finally, David in Orlando says, I'm glad to see this review being chosen as my VHS Best of Uncensored / Fall Brawl only had the main event cage match, so I've never seen the full pay-per-view before. Bulldog looking quite bloated. Was this a match where he nearly broke his back? Yes, it was. Every time I see Buff Bagwell now, I can't help but think of his not-so-buff body on Gigolo's doing the stuff on some old woman. Either Scott Hall is a tremendous actor who can play drunk, or he probably was. How old is Arn Anderson? Moving pretty quick in 98. Blah, blah, blah. Is it safe to say that the NWO music is the best piece of original music WCW ever produced? Which begs the question, when WWF bought the WCW tape library, shouldn't they have rights to all the original music a la Jericho?
Not all of it. Like, they had this lawsuit going on where Bad Street USA, I mean, that wasn't, I think that was co-written Like Michael Hayes collaborated on it, but the original composer of the song like was actually suing them, and they've had to remove, I think, certain shows from the network because of that. So it wasn't a case of them owning all of that.
Yeah, plus the Goldberg, right? I guess that's the most famous one.
Yeah.
But again, like with some of those themes, including maybe the Goldberg one, a lot of them are just like ripoffs of actual popular songs out there that I feel like WWE probably didn't want to risk, you know, playing.
Meanwhile, TNA on Sunday Night at Sacrifice, James Storm now comes out to a Johnny Cash cover.
Oh, is that right?
Look at that. So there you go.
TNA's got money, and they got their shit together,
sure.
Right?
Good. Let's go after the Johnny Cash library. We'll just remix it.
I think my favorite quote from the pay-per-view actually happened in the feedback, Fall Brawl 98 is why I love wrestling. That's a real thing that was said.
Wow. That's why I love wrestling.
Eight and a half classes. Out of ten. That's why I love wrestling. Smoke.
Well, that has brought an end to this surprisingly very fun chat about Fall Brawl 1998. Not I didn't know what this show would generate, but fun to look back at the good, more of the bad, and some of the just bizarre of WCW at the time. Before we end the show, Way, what do you want to review next week?
Well,
I feel we put you through the ringer this week, so I want you to pick something.
I'm actually glad Dylan chose this because I feel like we fulfilled our WCW quota for at least the month.
We got to remind our listeners WCW still exists.
Yeah, I would actually like to – we're a few weeks into it now. Let's look at this new WWE Network show that everybody's talking about, Legends House.
Oh, boy.
We haven't had a chance to really talk about it yet, so let's review the first two episodes of Legends House.
Okay, we'll review the first two shows of Legends House. I will go on to say this will probably be the only time I watch Legends House, but we will check that out next week. Have you got to see any of Legends House?
No, I haven't. A couple of my friends have the network, but I'm just weird about the way you can get it in Canada. I don't know. I don't want to give my card to them and then have
I'm the same. I'm the same. Yeah, I don't have the
network.
There are
other ways to get it, guys. If you just want to watch the specific shows.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We're fully aware of that, and thus we'll be reviewing Legends House next week. But I don't really have that desire to get the network. It's like when it comes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I have Fight Pass. That takes enough of my time.
Fight Pass, we won't go on a tangent here, is phenomenal right now. They do no promotion for what is on there. You would have no clue that you can watch. Like, there are 63 Pride shows up. They
Amazing.
Have, like, pretty much the whole WEC library up there. Strikeforce, Elite XC. Like, how would you not dedicate... Jesus, throw a trailer up during your shows. You have 7 hours. Tell us what's on Fight Pass. If most people, if they knew Pride shows were up there complete, Christ, like, promote this fact. It's really impressive how much stuff is up there now.
I think it's one of those things, though, where they're like, all the super nerds have it already. Let's just, you know, you can, if you want it, we have a banner. And you'd be like, what's that? And you could look at the preview of it. For the longest time, like, when I bought it when it first came out, and they didn't have a search bar.
Yeah.
I was why didn't you have a search bar? Like,
so
that's the first
bones.
Thing I could do.
Yeah, it was really...
It seems like a very extra... thing for them. Like, maybe they'll, if the WWE Network works out, they'll put a bunch of work into it, and then they'll already have it up and running, so it's like, it looks like brilliant on their part, but for now, it's just like, you guys can have this.
I get the sense we're gonna get the kind of Fight Pass 2.0, where they're gonna put a huge promotional relaunch, maybe around the summer or something, because they've added so much, they've finally tuned it. I think it was just a rush to get it up before that Singapore card, and it was just, Christ, the beta version was pretty much thrown out at people. Those first couple of months. But it's, hey, if you are a fan of any kind of period of mixed martial arts, I mean, it's a hell of a bargain at this point. For
it's amazing. And once they get up, once they buy the library, even if you like wrestling and you just want to see Japanese pro wrestlers get beaten up for seemingly no reason by Mirko Krokop.
Yeah, absolutely.
Del Rio.
Dos Caras Jr., that's sad to watch, but yeah, he did. The punch in the face, so needless.
I just last week I watched Quentin Jackson and Yuki Ishikawa, who is now a trainer at Santino Marella's gym, just get annihilated at the Championship Chaos show in 2001.
That's what I love.
Tremendous. I just went down a rabbit hole on my day off last week, discovering just on Fight Pass what all was there. I'm like, Jesus Christ, I had no clue all this stuff was up there.
Because they don't announce it. Whenever I get an email from them, it's like, oh, here's what's new on Fight Pass. I would, like, until you mentioned it, I had no idea where there was all the Pride, there was all Strikeforce.
It was just pure luck that I was just on there searching, and then all of a sudden, the Pride, you just went to their video library on there. Incredible. So there you go. Free promo for Fight Pass that they have not provided for themselves. But thanks a lot, Dylan, for stopping by.
Oh, thanks for having me, man. And like I said, I'm a big fan of the show, and Oh, man, I'm looking forward to Legends House for you guys reviewing it.
What? Where can our listeners go catch more of Dylan God? Give another plug for the album.
We got
out.
The plug album away. With John Hastings. We farted. We shouldn't have named it that. Anyway, it's pre-order on iTunes. Actually releases on May 6th. Please pre-order. You get a free bonus track. We're just trying to get number one on iTunes. It's available for order on iTunes. You go to dylanagott.com. There's links to it. At dylangott on Twitter, there's a link to it. There's pretty much – I've just blanketed the internet with links to this stuff. If you want to add me on Facebook or Twitter, I'm doing promo videos right now where I'm basically joining a bunch of internet websites and trolling them for promo for us. So
fantastic.
Yeah.
So dylanagott.com.
Yeah. dylangott.com was actually – yes. Dylan, D-Y-L-A-N-A is in the letter
Who's
A.
Who's the other Dylan Gott?
There's a bunch of them. And
the worst.
The best thing is one of the – I had a video on the old stand-up video on – YouTube for the longest time that had a bunch of views and stuff, but then I replaced it with a newer one. But there's a Dylan Gott who has a soccer highlight reel that I think he has more views than me right now, because all my friends, whenever I do a show, they're just like, here's a Dylan Gott slink, and it's just this little kid playing soccer. So go to Dylan Gott soccer highlight reel and have a good time, you know?
All right, well, check it out and then leave feedback at Dylan Gott on Twitter. Of course, for this show, next week we'll review the first two episodes of Legends House that's currently on the WWE Network. You can get all of our free shit at liveaudiowrestling.com, iTunes, Stitcher. Way is at Way0937. I am at I am John Pollock. And this Sunday night on The Law, Jim Ross joining us live for an extended period of time. He's going to stick around with Dave Meltzer right after the Extreme Rules pay-per-view, so check that out Sunday, 11 Eastern. And Mr. Gott, what should we – I was trying to work off your name again for another cheap pun. What music do you want us to get Gott here?
Can we play Bret Hart's WCW theme?
Which one?
The one on this show. I guess it'll be the first one.
Check this out, folks. Jim Johnston, it was not in WCW at the time.